Aaron Schwartz astounded his parents, who, with three already very gifted little boys, discovered that one of them, Aaron, could read at age three. By age 14, he was already advising high-level software designers on advanced scientific protocols for what would eventually become the internet architecture for all of social media. Designers would ask little Aaron why he never showed up at their meetings, and he had to tell them that his mom would never let him fly by himself at age 14. He was an early partner and creator of Reddit, a millionaire at the age of 19, who gave it all up for a higher value, making the emerging internet a force for freedom, democracy, and for good.
Growing up, you know, I slowly had this process of realizing that all the things around me that people had told me were just the natural way things were, the way things always would be, they weren't natural at all. They were things that could be changed, and they were things that, more importantly, were wrong and should change. And once I realized that, there was really kind of no going back.
Aaron Schwartz speaking there back in 2010, just months before he was arrested for using the digital repository JSTOR to download a trove of academic articles through MIT's computer network. Schwartz would be indicted by a federal grand jury, eventually charged by federal prosecutors on more than a dozen total charges, facing a prison sentence up to 50 years plus $1 million in fines. He was offered a plea deal to essentially agree that he was a criminal, a felon, something he could never do.
He just didn't believe that he could continue in his life with a felony. You know, he said to me one day, we were walking by the White House, and he said to me, they don't let felons work there.
That's Schwartz's former girlfriend, Quinn Norton, speaking in the new documentary, The Internet's Own Boy, the story of Aaron Schwartz, and how for Schwartz, true freedom could only mean killing himself. A monumental loss for the internet community and the people fighting for open access to the online world. Brian Knappenberger is the director of that film.
Right after he passed, there was this big wave of anger and frustration and sympathy that came even from people that didn't know him. And I think that the reason for that is that he did sort of symbolize a kind of choice, I think. A lot of people responded to, it seemed to me, a choice that he made after they sold Reddit to Condé Nast. That sale made him a really rich 19-year-old. And instead of staying on that kind of Silicon Valley startup treadmill, in other words, doing what most people do, which is just do it again, build the flip, you know, find another, you know, another business, sell it to a big corporation again, he took a pretty decisive turn towards social justice issues, towards political organizing, towards using his skills, putting them in the public interest. And I think ultimately that's probably what people respond to the most about his story.
How do you think he stumbled on this, you know, when you look at it, it's completely bizarre, but this situation where publicly supported research, academic research, is actually only available through companies that get it for free, but because it's academic can charge you outrageous fees for it. There are all kinds of companies that do this. One quoted in your film made $3 billion in 1 year doing it.
Yeah,
he said, "Wait a minute, this isn't public. If it costs this much money, I'm going to hack a way around it, and nobody's going to stop me."
It's an odd system. There's no question. It's an odd system that locks a lot of people out. Locks a lot of knowledge up in the kind of ivory tower, and people are offended by this. And Aaron was a part of a group of people that think that this is wrong. But I'd made a previous film called We Are Legion, the Story of the Hacktivists, which profiled a lot of people that are angry, frustrated with the system. In fact, they just want to burn it down and start over. Aaron was not one of those people. Aaron, to me, seemed like he wanted to work very much within the system. He wanted to sort of hack, quote-unquote, hack it in the best possible sense, understanding that social systems can be changed and altered. But I think he wanted to do that within the system. And I think of felony really takes you out of that system. I mean, you can't even vote in some states if you're a felon. And that was the one thing the prosecutors were never going to budge on. They wanted him to be a felon. They wanted him this to include a felony.
And so without that felony, he maintained his power to go up against some of the most formidable forces in Congress on two bills on changing the internet, one called SOPA, the other called PIPA.
Mm-hmm.
Bills that would, during the 90s, during the Clinton 90s, when no one was paying attention, would probably have just like floated through.
Without Aaron and his and a few others paying attention, this one probably would have too.
Sir, absolutely. He's the gatekeeper. He's the watchman on the beat. And he stands between this is going to pass. No brainer.
Yeah.
And absolutely turns everything around. Tell that story.
Yeah, he does. Well, it's him and he gets a ball rolling and a couple of groups really get on board. But he has this ability to kind of explain these complex issues to people in ways that they find relevant to their lives. And he was able to kind of take the message of SOPA, the Stop Online Piracy Act, and really explain it in ways that got people motivated, that made them understood that this was going to be damaging to this thing that they love, this kind of openness of the internet.
And Stop Online Piracy, everybody says, oh, that's a good idea.
Oh, it's misleading.
Aaron was able to say, no, what it really means is if anybody suspects anybody else of piracy, all they have to do is, you know, make a single phone call and they could shut down any small website on virtually no evidence. It's a reversal of the burden of proof.
Right, that's well put. So he's upset about this. This looks like it's a foregone conclusion, by the way. Like, it's already passed all the procedural hoops. It's ready. And there is an online protest that really gains a lot of steam. Lots of other groups got on board, and finally that culminated in a blackout day where a lot of people actually blacked out their websites, and ultimately...
And we're not just talking about, like, you know, Travelocity. We're talking about, like, Wikipedia.
Wikipedia, number 4 most visited website on the net.
Reddit.
Yeah. Google, even. Everybody got on board. And you just saw the people, Congress folks, fleeing from this. I mean, just jumping ship. And it was dead within a period of about 48 hours. I mean, look, this is how democracy should work in the digital age. It was kind of a shining example of a potential. I mean, this is how you do it. You're upset. You know, lots of people agree with you, and you petition your members of Congress, and they do what they're supposed to do. It's just that never happens. So it's one of the things that made it so extraordinary.
You use your brain. You make an argument. You use the mechanisms of a free society to argue your case, and the truth shall out.
It's what we learn as kids, right?
But why doesn't this story have a happy ending?
Well, even in the middle of that very kind of huge victory, really, the SOPA victory, he's still dealing with this incredible, awful prosecution. And once the prosecution starts, it's just this machine that it can't be turned around again. The prosecutor keeps ramping up charges against him. He's initially charged with 4 felony counts in his initial indictment. Then later he's given a superseding indictment that ups that to 13. 11 of the 13 are the result of this wildly outdated law called the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, which is a computer law that really hasn't had any meaningful changes since 1986. It was created after the movie War Games with Matthew Broderick. If you remember that movie,
mm-hmm.
He's trying to impress his girlfriend, actually almost starts a nuclear war in the movie. And that wasn't possible then. It's not possible now. But this movie scares Congress so much that they pass the CFAA. And as I mentioned, it hasn't had any meaningful changes since the 80s, even though obviously our lives have changed quite a bit since the 80s in terms of the networked ways in which we communicate. And he gets to a point where there aren't going to be any more plea deals. Trial is looming. And he ends up taking his own life, actually within a few days of the 2-year anniversary of his initial arrest.
What effect did that have on the people around him? People who were amazed by his brilliance, who were amazed by his bravery, who were terrified of his willingness to put himself in harm's way.
I mean, I think devastating is probably understating it. You know, I mean, they're mortified by this loss. One of the things that's really striking about his story is how many people that didn't know him were also moved by his story. That's part of the impetus for creating the documentary.
Brian, thanks so much.
Thanks.
Brian Knappenberger is the director of The Internet's Own Boy, the story of Aaron Schwartz. It opens in theaters this Friday.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.